different people attached. And can you talk a little bit about how you got involved in the product and sort of what the
I saw the play about 9 years ago with the original cast, and the emotional power was unlike anything I'd ever felt in theater. Because I was living in New York at the time, tended to go to the theater quite a bit. And I went to see it a few days later and just couldn't get it out of my head. I inquired about it as a film, but I think Martin Scorsese was attached to it at that point, so I'm not going to go near Martin Scorsese. So I went off and did something else, I don't remember what, and a few years later I asked if Spike Lee was going to do it. So I had forgotten about it, and finally when I was interested in it again a couple of years ago, I found out it was about to go to NBC as a miniseries. Oh. And I was concerned that everything I loved about the play would potentially be homogenized, and so I immediately got in touch with one studio, and they agreed to pay for the script. They got it away from NBC at the time, so I did a version of the script, but that studio put the script into turnaround immediately. The subject matter was a little dark, and they were concerned that it was not commercial, which was fine, it was cool. I was just looking for someone who would potentially make the film. Joe Roth at Revolution was a huge fan of the play, as was his daughter Julia, and Joe loved the script, fell in love, always loved the music, and agreed to make the film, so he saved the project for us. And that's how we began.
Right, and you decided to use most of the original cast members. Was that a challenge to get the studio to do that, or
No, it wasn't a challenge, no, not at all. It was me. I mean, I had some concern about, you know, people kept putting these ideas into my head about the film potentially not being a commercial prospect, so I had to think about, how am I going to get people to see a film about drag queens, drug addicts? And I thought, well, maybe this is a good idea. Maybe, and someone suggested to me, maybe we populate the film with pop stars. maybe we do the Justin Timberlake, Christina Aguilera, Usher version. It's true. So I went as far as, I met with Justin Timberlake, he's a fantastic guy. But I didn't know at the time if people would accept him as a sort of a broke, out of work singer in Manhattan. He's had some level of success. I was very close to it. I thought he might do a great job. But then I started to meet the original cast members. And I was intrigued because I sensed something. Obviously, I was a big fan. But I also realized that they shared something because of the situation with Jonathan Larson, because of the tragic situation where Jonathan Larson, who, I don't know, most of you are probably familiar with, but Jonathan Larson, who did all the music, composed the score, tragically died of an aortic aneurysm the night before the first preview of the play. So he never lived to see any of the success, any of what happened with Rent. So those eight original actors did the show every night. In their own words, they said, as a tribute to Jonathan, as a memorial to Jonathan Larson. And something happened in those 16 months that they did that. There was this bond that was created between them. And as a director, sometimes you hire actors and you say to them, okay, go bowling, have dinner, and hopefully some chemistry will happen within a week. That's in one of the directing books I read at NYU. And it's never worked, but I gotta say. But I just had never seen anything like this, and I wanted to. I thought, because of the way they interact with each other, because of this bond, I'd like to capture that on film. At least I thought I could capture that on film. And I also just was intrigued by their level of talent. The fact they really hadn't aged since they had done the show. So that was why I cast six of the original eight. The other, Daphne Rubin Vega was pregnant at the time, so she couldn't do it. And Freddie Walker, who played the original Joanne, was, in her account, too old for the role.
Did that also help in the way you rehearsed and sort of, you know, developed the film and sort of got it on to film? I mean, did you have a definitive idea of the way you wanted to shoot this going into it, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it in our creative group. We talked about, would an audience be, some people were saying, would an audience be open to people singing on screen? And it's a genre that's existed forever. And I felt that people were saying, well, Chicago. In Chicago, she went into a fantasy world, and that's where the musical numbers existed. And I felt that this was a genre that's worked in musical theater for centuries, and certainly on film since the jazz singer. So I felt that people singing on screen would work, because most of our children, you know, teenagers have been exposed to MTV, so they're accustomed to that style, that genre. And I realized that if the sets were realistic and we created a realistic New York world, people would buy into the concept of people singing. It was also helpful to begin the film with Seasons of Love. And begin Seasons of Love on stage opens the second act of the play. And what it does is after you've gone out for a drink, it's intermission, and you're buying some souvenirs, you come back in, it enables you to get back into the world of Rent. So I used it as a for the credit sequence to tell people it's okay. This is a musical, people are gonna be singing, sit back, relax.
Were you also concerned though about portraying a contemporary New York that sort of doesn't exist anymore in terms of, you know, people, sort of the sex and the cityification of New York, or
that's
Starbucksization.
It certainly has become a it's overly gentrified. There's a Starbucks on every corner, and it was very difficult for us to find areas in the East Village, at least that I remember when I lived there, that still existed. You know, because you would find a Starbucks, you would find we had to shoot on very isolated areas. And there was also a problem with shooting musical numbers at night in Manhattan because so many videos have been shot there over the years, all through the night. People with children were at the cell were complaining that their children were staying up all night and couldn't go to school the next morning. So they passed an ordinance in Manhattan that no musical numbers could be shot on the streets after 10 p.m. We got one extension for One Song Glory till midnight, and so we were forced with a situation like Rent, which obviously you've seen is a huge production number, we were forced to shoot that on a back lot in Los Angeles.
I think I'm sure people have a lot of questions, so I think we can open it up for a few if anyone.
I read that there was a kind of an angry conflict number between Anthony Rapp and Adam Pascal's character in the play that was cut out of the film. Is that true? I'm not sure. I'm just asking.
Just in case you didn't hear that, the question was that there was a conflict between two of the characters in the play that was excised from the movie.
Yeah, forget the soundtrack element, still there. We recorded it. It was a number called Goodbye Love. And when we first screened the film in the editing room, we screened the film over and over again. By the time it happened after the funeral, and at that point, I emotionally, personally shut down. I couldn't deal with any more emotion. It just was too much. The film couldn't handle it. On stage, you could handle it because you're sitting in the back row and you really don't have any means to get close to the actors. So the emotional power took a lot longer to sort of get to the audience, in a sense. So when I saw the film, I shut down, and at that point, it sort of hurt the finale of the film. It really hurt the finale. So we tried a version that at first sounded appalling to the editor and I. We decided to remove those 5 minutes and see what happens, and suddenly the film felt alive, and suddenly the movie worked. So that's what happened to it. It will be on the DVD, but I wouldn't put it back into the context of the film because I do feel it's too much. Oh, thanks.
And I've seen the original musical, so I'm curious to know how did you choose which lyrics to, like, the, some of the dialogue to have them sing, and some, like the answer machine, or just some of them picked up on the street to have them not sing?
The question was, how do you choose dialogue and when people would sing and when they would?
It came down to the songs. You know, the play, you remember, the play is about 2 hours and 40 minutes long. And we felt that would be too long for the film. And I learned a valuable lesson on the first three. Well, by the time we got to the third Harry Potter film, we realized that shorter might be a little better. I stopped being so intensely faithful to the source material. And I felt that I had to go into Rent with that same attitude. And I had to, that's why I eventually cut that specific song we were talking about. But it also, I felt there was a sense of pacing that needed to happen. So it was really pretty easy. I felt that some of the songs didn't really translate to film that well. So those songs we lost fairly early on. Some songs we struggled with. There's a number called Contact, if you're familiar with it. in the original stage play that we struggled for months. We choreographed an entire sequence, and it just ended up not being shot because it just was, again, it just didn't work for the film. In terms of dialogue, if you recall, in the playbill of the Broadway, when you go see the Broadway show, in the playbill, there's a little map with each of the characters with a little dotted lines connecting them, explaining to the audience who these people are, what their relationships are. And some people have had some concern about the stage play because they found certain elements of the character development or certain relationships confusing. So I felt it was important when we were working on the screenplay to make absolutely certain that it was clear what these relationships were. For instance, why these guys would even hang out with Benny in the first place. We had to develop him more as a character. And so the dialogue really existed in terms of moving the story forward. There was a short time when I thought about doing the entire film musically, but I just didn't feel that would work. I thought it would distance the audience from the character somewhat.
Congratulations on the film. Awesome. Absolutely loved it. I've also seen the play. Been a huge admirer of your work for years. And I was just wondering, it's probably hard to pick one, but if you have a favorite number or a nice memory from this film that you can share with us.
A favorite number or memory from shooting the film.
I think the most important thing about this film, when I talked about the making of the film, when I talked about the element of getting these eight actors together, it was really unlike anything I had ever seen before, because on days when they weren't working, the other actors would show up and just watch us work, support the other actors. You'll probably hear that story a lot and read it a lot, but it really happened. We'd be shooting a scene, on one song, Glory, we had half of the cast on the rooftop watching Adam perform alone. They were just there for support. They were there because they love the material, and as Anthony Rapp said, you know, his feeling is this is going to exist forever, and we were putting it down on film forever. And we just had this really amazing sense of support. No one was hanging out in the trailers. There were no trainers or cooks or any of that nonsense. Everybody was very, very determined to really get this on screen the right way. I was the most excited about shooting with Levi Owen. I really wanted to make sure that came across as alive and vital, and some of my favorite lyrics are in that song, so I thought it was extremely important.
I thought Rosario Dawson was great also. How did she get cast?
How did you decide on Rosario Dawson?
Well, when we needed to find a meeting, we saw a lot of people, and Rosario came in, and she did, she never really, I think, had done any musical. She wasn't a singer. She didn't consider herself a singer. She came in and did Out Tonight as a rehearsal piece, and Without You. And she blew us away. She was very fragile, and she moved incredibly well. And I just thought, she's pretty amazing. This is a side of her that no one's ever seen before. So we, Michael Barnett, the producer, and I, she left the audition, and we both ran after her. We got the role, and Michael gave her his Rent necklace. And she was part of it. But it was really, we were convinced that she really was something special.
Yeah. I'd like to ask the same
of
Tracy Thomas.
Yeah, Tracy was, I was looking for someone, I actually cast Tracy. Usually I'm pretty neurotic about seeing people in person, actors. I really want to see them in the room, because videotape or DVD, you film, sometimes they'll film their audition. Tracy came in and auditioned in New York and sent me a DVD, or sent the casting director a DVD. And I saw it and was completely blown away by her as an actress, and her voice, even on a terrible little DVD speaker, just blew me away. So I hired her from the DVD. I thought, she's incredible.
I'm a total Rent head. You did an amazing job.
Oh, thank you.
You were the guys I'm afraid of.
So I was just wondering how the original cast members took to Rosario and Tracy, and also what the rehearsal process was like.
What the rehearsal process was like, and adding in the new people with the old people. How did you do that?
Yeah, they were... The original six, when Rosario and Tracy showed up for rehearsals, they were there for about 2 days, and Taye Diggs said to me, it seems like they've been here forever. So they immediately embraced them and welcomed them into the group. So that was easy. The rehearsal process was quite extensive. We had a, when the actors, before we even got the actors, we had a group of what we called skeleton dancers. And those 12 to 15 dancers choreographed every number. And I would look at those numbers every single day and we would make changes. And then by the time the actors came in a few months before we started shooting, the actors would watch the numbers and then get into the process as well. The key was, is that Rent on Broadway, as you well know, was not a traditional musical. So the choreography was not a traditionally choreographed piece. Marlies Yearby, who was the original choreographer, felt that the choreography of the play should come from the characters. The movement, all of that should exist from within the characters. So that was our philosophy in the film. And if it ever got a little too movie-like, or it felt like it wasn't part of their characters, we'd pull it. Keith Young, who was the choreographer, and I would just pull it back to make sure it felt like it was in that world. La Vie Bohème at one point felt very choreographed, and then as we got closer and closer to shooting it, we wanted to make it feel more improvised and more real. And the only real choreographed number is the fantasy sequence in Tango Marin, obviously.
And I mean, were you worried? Obviously, there's such a cult surrounding the show. You have to open the movie up to a lot of people who haven't seen the show. But were you really worried about sort of the hardcore fans and how they might react if you monkeyed with things?
And no, because I said I learned a lot on Harry Potter, and you know, I got thousands of letters after the first film from kids saying, can you please make it longer? And thousands of letters from parents saying, can you please make it shorter? So I stopped being, Harry Potter was a great lesson because I stopped being so concerned about that. You know, I really had to think about it as a film.
In the back.
Yeah, I just want to thank you. I think this is going to do more to help America understand gay people and gay relationships than any film I've ever seen.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad you said that, because I think it's a very important film for people to see, and thank you. Thanks.
I'm just curious, as much as you're willing to discuss it, what are the expectations from the studio? Because I can imagine most of your peers see the play and are very dedicated to it, but trying to get that audience that is not maybe so open to musicals, it seems as if this could be really amazing on DVD no matter what happens in the box office. So I'm just curious what the studio's expectations are.
So the question is, what Revolution expects the film to do?
I think everyone's very, very. All I'd like to say at this point is that, because we're all cautiously optimistic, but we're all very, very excited about the film. Revolution has been extremely supportive, and Tom Sherrick at Revolution and Joe Roth just love the film. And when somebody loves the film that much, and they're so supportive and so passionate about it, it really makes a difference. And they're behind it 100%. I think all of us have gotten to a point in this film, unlike any other, where we're Revolution, myself included, we're only thinking about getting each and every person to see Rent. And it's like, if we have to, you know, go to one person at a time and drag them into the theater, we will, because we believe in it that much. We really, really do. And for a lot of reasons. So I believe that this, I hope, that this will have a long life in theaters, because we need that right now. Obviously, the film business needs it. And I also think it's the place to see it the first time, because you can, as you guys tonight, you know, it was interesting to hear people applauding after the musical numbers as if we were in a real theatrical experience. So I just, you know, I really think the sound, you know, the sound of the music, which incidentally was recorded, produced by, the first cast album was recorded in 3 days as the cast was doing the show. So they were never really that happy with it. It was the soundtrack to my life for 9 years, including all the Rent heads, I'm sure. But the cast themselves really wanted it to sound great. And I felt that it could have a much harder edge, strong rock and roll sound, because some certain songs demanded it. Rent demanded it, Out Tonight demanded it. And we looked at, when I first heard American Idiot by Green Day, I looked at the producer, and it was a guy named Ross Cavalla, who produced that record, produced most of Green Day's records, actually. And he agreed to produce the songs, and it took, as opposed to 3 days, it took about 4 months. Yeah. And that to me is something you should hear in the theater.
Well, the sound is great, and the DVD's going
to
do well.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I was curious when watching the credits that Robert De Niro was one of the producers. I was wondering how he got involved and what he brought to the filmmaking.
Robert De Niro is one of the producers, and Tribeca was involved with the, were they involved with the film from the start?
I think they developed the film from the start,
right.
And I'm hoping to meet Mr. De Niro at the premiere. Well, it's interesting because until I did this, I was under the naive assumption that you just, you know, actors came in and they were just lip syncing. I knew they were performing, but I didn't realize that to make it feel authentic and real, you actually have to sing.
Yeah.
Which was eye-opening to me and a real strain on the actors. For instance, in the I'll Cover You reprise in the church, Jesse Martin is almost fainting at the end of every take. Some of those shots, which obviously are not in the film, as soon as he finished I'll Cover You, he starts to move back. He almost fainted three or four times. So there were certain times when the actors would say to me, I just can't do it anymore. Wilson Heredia, for instance, you know, when Wilson did the show, he did Today For You once, you know, one in a matinee days, two times. But when we did the film, we shot it over 3 days. So by the time he had done all that choreography and all that singing for about 12 hours, his legs were getting rubbery. He was really giving out. At one point when he jumped on the table, he was jumping on the table and his knees slammed into the table. He couldn't do it anymore. So they really gave their heart and soul to it.
What involvement did the Larson Estate have with the development of the film, and what has been their response to the film, which I'm sure they've seen by this point?
The Larson's just the most amazing, another incredible experience in the film, you know. And sometimes, I know it kind of gets boring to hear how great everything was or how supportive everyone was, but Al Larson, you know, having lost his son is such a horrendous thing for anyone to have to experience. But Al was on the set every day. We had a chair for him. He was just there for moral support. Julie, Jonathan's sister, was there 99% of the time as well. And she was, again, there for moral support. But if I had any questions about what was Jonathan's intent, what were certain things, she gave me Jonathan's notebook at one point so I could look through to certain lyrics that weren't in the show, just to give me sort of insights into specific characters. They've been nothing but incredibly supportive, unbelievable family, and they do love the film. You know, I wish they were here so they could tell you, but they've seen it a couple of times and they're wild about it, which is great.
I had a question about the period of time. It seemed to, what made you decide to maybe set it in the late 80s? I don't know if the original show was set in the mid 90s or.
Did you decide it's 1989, I think, the show starts? Did you?
Yeah, that actually is an interesting question, because a few people have said to me, why didn't you set it in 1996 when the show premiered on Broadway? Well, that's not when the show began. If you look at the big Rent coffee table book that was done with the show, Billy Aronson, who wrote the original story and the lyrics, started writing it in 1989 about the friends that he had known, about people who were dying of AIDS at the time. So the play was originally, it was never clear in the show, it was never mentioned in the show, but it was sometime between 1988 and 1990. So I just chose 1989 and 1990 because that's when the play was written. I mean, that's when the concept of the play originated. And then obviously it started off Broadway, I think in 92 maybe. 91, so by the time it did get to Broadway, yeah.
There were some kind of projection articles written by some journalists in the entertainment realm that I mean, I don't in any way agree with this, having seen the film, but they were saying that they felt maybe it was going to feel dated.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you could just answer, you know, that general buzz. I'm just curious how you would. I mean, I would have my own answer, but do you have a reply to them?
There were some articles written where people wondered if the film would seem dated or audiences would be able to relate to this subject matter today.
Some of the people who I have some questions from the earlier studio of the development picture before Revolution got involved, and they were concerned that it might be dated and that the subject of AIDS was dated, but mine, you know, which infuriated me because AIDS is a global epidemic and it's a bigger issue than it's ever been. So no, I was never worried that it was going to be dated. I stayed away from, because I did want the film to have a bit of a, I wanted it to feel like it was in the 80s, obviously, but I did want it to feel like it had a bit of a timeless quality. And I stayed away from the more obvious horrific things of the 80s that may have made people want, you know, huge glasses, gigantic glasses, or the gigantic Madonna hair we stayed away from. So no, I don't think the picture does feel dated. And it's, as I said, I think it's probably more relevant today than it's ever been. I really believe that because I think a lot of people in the country and in the world need to see it. A lot of kids who might be feeling confused about themselves, a lot of people need to deal with tolerance and acceptance. I just think it deals with a lot of things that I think are important.
I think we have to wrap things up, but one thing I wanted to ask is obviously, you know, there are more musicals coming out. I think Dreamgirls and Hairspray are two prominent ones, but I mean, would there be any other musicals you would want to do? Was this it for you, or do you think if the genre continues succeeding, there's another show you might want to do?
Well, possibly, but I've never been more obsessed by a piece of material. I mean, Harry Potter lived with me for a while, but that was only a few years before I actually got to work on the three films. But Rent has lived with me for almost 10 years, so I can't really think of another musical that's stayed with me for that long that I've been that obsessed with.
Thanks. Thank you very much. One more.
Short question.
Okay.
Where do you plan on being opening night of the movie?
I wish I could be in New York because I've heard that
the guy we talked to.
I live in San Francisco, so I probably can't make it to New York that night. But I heard that the 12 o'clock midnight show is sold out at a couple of theaters in Manhattan. To me, that would be the greatest audience to see this movie. I think they're going to be, I think there'll probably be a lot of booing. I'll be somewhere at some theater in San Francisco. Just, I'll probably pop into a few theaters in San Francisco. Probably in the Castro today.